This show was made at Art Media with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, artmedia.org.nz. Welcome to Parenting With, the podcast that explores real stories behind family life. Whether you're a parent, caregiver, grandparent, or part of the wider village, Parenting With offers understanding, encouragement, and reassurance that you're not alone. Now here's Parenting With, only on RFM.
Now, my Aori Minds is Parenting With, and today it is actually just going to be me. So what I've realised is that we've kind of launched into talking a lot about parenting with lots of different circumstances, which we're going to be continuing to do. And you're kind of trusting me with some of this advice or bringing you some of these conversations without having really introduced myself and done the very important part of Waka Whanaungatanga. So I thought it was really important that today I would do that, share a little bit about my parenting philosophy, where it comes from, and why I'm so passionate about what I do. So, ko Crystal Dene, he uri no Ngāti Mutunga rawa ko Kaitau. So, I am descended from Ngāti Mutunga in North Taranaki and Kaitau all around South Island, also Ngāti Mutunga ki Whakakauri. So, we also migrated over to the Chatham Islands or Whakakauri. Come back up here. So, I was born and raised in Taranaki and have spent my time working here and raising children here as well. And I think a lot of my parenting philosophy sort of centres around being raised in Taranaki and the sort of population that lives here as well, and also being tangata whenua. So that's informed a lot of what I do. Also, like all of us, we continue to talk about this in our parenting programs and throughout the podcast as well. It's also informed by a lot of my own experiences. So just like everybody else, I'm working with a filter in my brain that sometimes gives me helpful narratives, sometimes gives me not so helpful narratives. And we're going to talk a little bit today about where some of that stuff came from and the journey of exploration that's kind of brought me here to the parenting philosophy that I hold today and what we teach in our mahi as well, and supporting other whānau. So I guess a little bit of backstory. As I said, raised here in Taranaki, I had mum and dad growing up for a time and had two brothers. One is 5 years older, one is 2.5 years younger. We were raised very modestly,
never really had a heck of a lot of money.
And I, looking back now, I have no idea how mum made everything work the way that she did, because we never felt kohara, we never felt like we were missing out on anything, even though I know now that it was a very different story, that we were in fact quite strapped. So yeah, really grew up, I guess, seeing a woman, a mum, holding everything together in the face of some pretty extreme circumstances at times. But yeah, mum was always like our pole. She was definitely always our rock, even going through everything that she was going through at the time as well. So yeah, I guess a fairly typical family for the 80s, two parents, three kids. Yeah, not a whole lot of money, but we always participated in everything. Every time we, you know, had a sporting thing come up, mum always made that happen.
And yeah, fairly typical for everybody else that I knew at the time growing up. The thing that wasn't so typical, maybe, or was for a lot of whānau that was going on under the surface, was there was also a lot of abuse in my whānau.
So not
from my mum, but definitely from my father, and
definitely targeted towards very much my older brother and myself. And my younger brother experienced a lot of it through having to see a lot of that go on as well. But yeah, learned to sort of keep himself quiet so that he didn't experience it quite as much as myself and my older brother. I was very much the loud one, trying to bring things to attention that I felt were wrong. And yeah, so I guess always from a very, very early age had that very strong sense of social justice, which carried me through into the mahi that I do today. So had a pretty stable, you know, apart from that going on, had a pretty stable schooling life. Went to the same primary school, really enjoyed school actually, found it to be my escape. And then went through intermediate years, and that was probably when I started to, you know, when my behaviour started to change. So I'd always been really, really good at school, really enjoyed school. And then I think all of the sort of repressed anger and hurt that I've been carrying for all that time started to sort of come out around about my intermediate years.
And then definitely carried on through to high school. So definitely by the age of 13 was drinking, trying lots of drugs, running away, not going to school, all those sorts of things. And the funny thing at that time was that my biggest supporters and the
people that I really relied on were actually a truancy officer.
her name was EY, and lots some people listening might remember EY in her little green car. She then had somebody come on board called Phil, and they were then driving around in a van. So she was awesome. She was so cool. She when you know like she always knew I was going to be running away from school. She usually knew where to find me.
She knew the typical places that I would go and hang out.
And it would just be like, come on, Crystal, jump in the car, we're going to take you back to school. And that was it. So she at that time taught me something that I hadn't really experienced before, which was,
Being able to have boundaries with somebody.
while also making them feel safe and secure. And up until that point, I had only really experienced boundaries in the way of violence. I think
My father was very much about that, or about yelling, or the silent treatment, that horrible feeling. Whereas my mum was, I think, trying to make up for what was going on at home and was.
was quite relaxed with me in a lot of ways, to try and make up for some of the other stuff that was happening, and tried to
Give me a bit more freedom than what I was experiencing with my dad as well. So yeah, it must have been a really, really tricky time for mum. I can't even imagine. But so she would be the one that would take me and drop me off to my friend's house in secret and stuff like that when dad had locked me in my room for a couple of days or whatever.
so it was.
Getting very, very much signals of my mum's there and is very much trying to help me in all the ways that she can, and trying to make up for some of these other things that are going on, and then having some very, very harsh boundaries, but not feeling safe with it.
So I then had this truancy officer who was giving me the experience that I hadn't really had before. And I actually had the same thing with a Māori,
Youth aid officer.
his name was Warren Wepātine. And between the two of them, they
Would keep coming and picking me up, but they would talk to me in a way that
I had not experienced before. I felt cared for, I felt seen, I felt like they actually cared about what was happening with me, whether they were able to do anything about it or not. And they would just continually keep doing their jobs, keep coming and picking me up, giving me the opportunity to talk, even though I never really did, and creating a feeling of safety. And I think that is something that has stuck with me throughout my years, that right at the time that I needed it, I had these people there that were creating this feeling that I hadn't really had before. And something that I very much strive to create now for my children and for the people that I work with. Anybody that experiences connection with me, actually, trying to create that feeling of safety, and it very, very much came from them in a big way. I was also running away a lot from home and went through a few different other houses, trying to find somewhere that I would actually stay, but just kept running away from everywhere. I was staying with boyfriends, never really attending, out of a couple of schools, and then finally, EY was able to say to me, "Look, if I can get you back into Girls High," which was the only school that I had actually stayed at for a reasonable amount of time. He was like, "Would you promise me that you'll at least go for half the year?" I was like, "Yep, think I can do that." So we ended up settling on going there, having been through a few different houses, trying a few different schools, staying with my nana. I literally got picked up by my mum and dropped off to my nan.
Reeking of alcohol, and I think I was going to go to a Waitara school out there, but never actually attended, and was just working with my nan at some tea rooms that she had. So that was a real change too, having to.
Get up at, I think it was like 5:30 in the morning, go to the tea rooms, make sandwiches, make pies, and that was where I found a real love for cooking as well, and found that that was a real.
Way that I really enjoyed taking care of others and showing my uffie and my love for others through cooking.
And it was very much something that my nana had as well. She was also somebody that, so my nan, my dad is the Māori one in the whānau, and my nan
His mum.
Māori also, and she, although she didn't
Speak real Māori, very much lived tikanga Māori, so it was very much, taking care of others, and she took in a lot of foster kids.
and had done through the years. She'd lived in Auckland for quite some time as well before moving back down to Waitara, and yeah, had always been taking in other people. Then I ended up there and had a whole new routine that I'd never experienced before, and found that I actually really loved working. and probably would much prefer to work than go to school. That's a little bit of my early years. Obviously, a lot of turmoil, a lot of, for my poor mum, not even knowing where I was half the time. And then had some experiences of my dad turning up, finding out where I was, and just absolutely frightening everybody else around me. I think that again was another experience that I had, that I've had this narrative that I've had to deal with as an adult. I very much had this narrative growing up that don't matter, not seen, no one's going to stick up for me, all of those sorts of things. And very much, that's something that I need to do for myself, that you can't rely on anybody else. And had lots and lots of circumstances and instances that kind of confirmed that over the years, that being one of them. I mean, obviously looking back now as an adult, I can see, look, these were just teenagers, young 20-year-olds that were absolutely terrified of my father coming in and yelling at everyone and dragging me out of there. And of course, like, there was nothing that anybody could have done, but again, reinforce this narrative through no fault of anybody else's,
that I was not going to be able to rely on anybody else. And the reason I talk about these things is not to, not to therapize it or anything like that, but to
try and help people to understand that all of the things that we tell ourselves and the narratives that come up in our parenting, they're embedded from our childhood. And if we can go back and understand some of these things and where they come from, not necessarily having to attribute any blame to it, but just being able to understand it, it helps us to see where some of these triggers are going to be coming up for us. And also how we might be able to address them and help reparent ourselves through that as well, so that we're able to give something better to our kids than what we experienced, or something different that we have intentionally created. The next wee while, I'm actually developing a parenting program through having, over 20 years of experience as a social worker, a therapist, and a mum and a kwi, of some of these things, and thinking about how we can really take some of those experiences that we've had and say, okay, we understand where these have come from, and now start to say, okay, well, what's serving us, what's working for us, and what's not, and how can we intentionally create a whānau culture that feels right for us. And anything that comes into that whānau culture, we can kind of look at it and go, right, that doesn't fit with us, which makes it much easier for us to have boundaries with other people as well, which is again something that I've always struggled with, is to have boundaries. So having a structure like this can make it a lot easier.
to be able to see what fits with your whānau culture and say yes or no to things that you might feel instinctively don't feel good, but this gives you the rationale and
And some real understanding behind
why you might want to be letting some things in and why you might not want to. And then, what happens when we move away from that whānau culture? How do we never get back to it as well? So very much something that we've been
living within our own whānau and trying to find our way to that waka pōmo, that understanding of one another, that contract, that binding with one another that we all come back to, or that punga that we have in our whānau, that anchor. So I guess, trying to use some of my experiences and our whānau experiences to help other people feel seen.
validated that, hey, this is something that happens, like.
Actually went to a concert last night with my 13-year-old boy, a Laufey concert, someone that I'm not really that familiar with, but he really, really wanted to go. And something that she said really stuck with me, which is that we all have big emotions. We all experience big emotions, however we deal with them. And you can pretty much guarantee that somebody else in this room or somebody else listening is going to be feeling something that you're experiencing, or they have experienced something, they're going to experience something, they're going to have these emotions. And how human is that, that we can all have these emotions and feel the same thing? But to feel
Validated and seen is something that I think that we've lost.
within our communities as well. So, whether that's by listening to somebody through a podcast or watching a YouTube video or listening to music, as long as we can feel validated and seen, then that helps us to have that connection with one another, that helps us to heal. So I guess that's the very base philosophy of everything that I do, and a lot of it comes from having had those experiences. So I guess after going through that move, I moved into my own flat actually. So I was flatting pretty young, I think I was about 14 at the time. And trying to navigate work, flatting, going to school, whenever I did go to school. I was lucky enough that one of the things that I had really embraced was academics. and really found my place within that. So school actually came pretty easy to me. A lot of other things didn't, but school did. So that was the one anchoring point where I knew that I could be successful. So sort of even though I navigated away from it, kept coming back to it eventually. And it was something that I really, really gravitated towards after having my daughter, which was the real, real turning point in my life. So at the age of 18, found out that I was hapū, or pregnant with my daughter, and she was the absolute turning point for my life. And I can imagine that there are a lot of people listening who would have a very similar story, that they're having their child was the real turning point for them. I've got no idea where I would have been. I'd had attempts at taking my life before that, had definitely had a lot of experiences of ending up in hospital with, you know, alcohol poisoning and horrible things like that. A lot of mental health issues I was going through, and just covering everything up with whatever I could, whether that be alcohol or boys, or, you know, whatever it was to take that horrible feeling away. And then all of a sudden had this massive turning point that, hey, I had this beautiful
wee girl
who was going to rely on me for the rest of her life and the rest of my life. And what am I going to do about that? So it was very easy. It has always been very easy for me to put myself aside and to, you know, I've always found it very difficult to advocate for myself or to have boundaries for myself, or, you know, I learned as a young child that the best way to keep myself safe was to be a people pleaser, essentially. So
make other people feel good or
give them what they need, and really put my own needs into the background. And all of a sudden was like, okay, well, I don't want to be raising a daughter this way. I don't want her to be going through the same things. And what am I actually going to do? So when she was 9 months old, I'd kind of been working here and there in different places like CCS and things like that, in some different caring roles. And then decided that, you know, I'd had this social worker when I was younger that I actually
really didn't like. I didn't like the way he treated me. I
felt like he didn't listen to me at all, did not understand what was going on in my family at all. And I was like, right, well, that's what I want to do. I'm going to be a social worker. I'm going to go work for SIFS at the time, and I'm going to change the whole system. That was my thinking. So yeah, Harmony was 9 months old, and decided to start studying social work. Through that time, I was also experiencing some quite significant postnatal depression. So after having Harmony,
I loved her. Absolutely, you know, like, was just so...
I couldn't believe that I had this wee girl and everything that she was, this little wee human, and wanted so much more for her. But I just felt like I couldn't attach. And it was the most guilt I think I have ever experienced up until that point, was feeling like I should feel something that I just didn't feel. So I'd do all of the things like taking care of her, feeding her, you know, dressing her, all of those sorts of things. But it really took a good probably year, 18 months for me. And this is real raw, real vulnerable. I can feel the tears coming now talking about this. Yeah, it took a good 18 months for me to really, really feel that, you know, that rush of like, oh, I've got this beautiful girl and I'm just in love with her and I absolutely adore her. And when it came, it really came. It really came. And she has been my everything, my very first love ever since then. Yeah, it took a really good while to come to that. And I had actually had a really good social worker through that time. I went to a postnatal depression group, the lovely woman called Sally Phillips. And that was, I think, so combined with going through a social work degree, I all of a sudden started to look into myself and start to see where some of these things had come from. And the amount of growth that came through that period was just amazing. And I think that it was that really allowed me to start attaching to my child and doing all of these things that were laying dormant in there, but I just hadn't allowed myself to feel. Or my brain hadn't allowed myself, you know. Perhaps there was a thing in there that was like, it's not safe to feel this much for somebody else. Who knows? I still don't know. Yeah, I guess we don't know a lot about postnatal depression.
But yeah, so funnily enough, when I put her into daycare, it wasn't a big thing for me because I was like, okay, well, she's going to be taken care of. It's okay. I'll go and do my thing. And then, you know, by the time that big rush came of being really, really attached to her, I
all of a sudden really missed her.
Really, really missed this sweet girl that I was just absolutely in love with and adored, and found it really, really hard to send her to daycare. And she was absolutely fine, but she would actually cry sometimes when I came back to get her, and experience that this thing that other people, that other parents talk about, where it's like, oh, my heart is breaking because my daughter's away from me. So now looking back on that, it was hard at the time to feel those feelings, but I'm so glad I did, because it was so much harder to not feel it through the time that I was going through the postnatal depression.
So she was, having her was the start of not only my journey of trying to find a career to take care of her, but a career that was going to be meaningful for other people. And what I didn't realize was that it was going to be so meaningful for me.
Was that?
I was going to just discover myself through that time and have continued to do so since then. So I think it's actually, to go any further with that part of the story, I think would take probably a whole nother episode. So I think what I might actually do now is end
This episode here, and I thought it was only going to be one episode of getting to the, getting to know me and my story and where I've come from as well. But I think we might actually leave it there and pick it up again with when I started through social work and what that looked like in the early years with Harmony, and then subsequently creating a new family and having two more kids.
So I guess that's the one thing I never went over at the start, was that I do currently live in Stratford. Got two other boys apart from Harmony. So Harmony is now 23. You've heard her on the podcast already. Absolutely amazing, beautiful girl, and don't know how we got to where we are. And I also have a 13-year-old boy and an 8-year-old who you are going to hear on the podcast at some point, talking about their experiences and what they think makes a good parent as well, which is going to be pretty cool. So and also a clue to my beautiful
Muckle boy, Ollie, who you've heard Harmony talk about already as well.
So we will leave it there for this week. Really, really looking forward to picking it up again. I hope you've all
You're all feeling a little bit more connected, or a little bit more understanding of, well, who is this person and why are they on here about a parenting podcast? And I think just because of all the experiences that we have been through as a whānau, there's usually some thread that we can use to relate to somebody else that might be going through the same thing, even though it's, everybody experiences it completely differently. At least there might be a thread there that we can use to connect with one another. So that was Parenting with Fire Crystal.
And we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information on this show and others like this, head along to our website, artmedia.org.nz. That's artmedia.org.nz. We've made this podcast with help from New Zealand On Air. For more information about this show and other local shows, make sure you head to our website, artmedia.org.nz.